I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Hello and welcome back to the study.
Sorry.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast from Ringer FC. I'm Nisok Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am bloody great. Thanks, mate. How are you?
Excellent. Glad to hear it. What's excellent? Anything in particular?
My computer screen is filled with your wonderful face. That's why I'm so
great. Oh, don't. You're starting to pander to the vase.
If after 200 odd episodes, I don't know my audience. If I don't know the person, if I don't know how to get you in the mood for some football podcasting, then I wouldn't be doing my job.
Populism.
You are a football populist.
Cheap sops to please the audience. Populist. That's true. Actually,
if there was a footballing electoral commission, you would banish it. You'd get rid of it so you could have complete control.
I would.
How are you?
I'm good, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the end of the week. We've had the Champions League, so that's been a joy. Can I say this? There's something about this stage of the season where being able to immerse yourself absolutely in just a couple of games is something I really
it's
love.
The best. It's the
amazing.
Best.
I was actually a bit antisocial last night. I should apologize to my friends because they went to watch the game in the bar. This is actually quite antisocial of me. I don't normally do this.
Generic sports chat. So my friends went to watch the game in the bar.
Yeah, so Liverpool, Villarreal.
All right, American sitcom. Yes. Go watch the game in the bar, please.
Oh my God, there's canned laughter. Canned laughter. But I must say, I just want to sit here and absorb this game. And what I love about these Champions League games, which we'll talk about, these two semi-finals, in different ways, there was just like so much texture.
Oh, they were both great.
And I love the fact they were so different, actually. We'll get into this, but I love the fact. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Ignore your local mainstream football
media
talk radio, just drink it in anyway. Exactly. Let's do some admin quick. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, and bit of a change to the Ringer FC schedule. You might have noticed Wrighty's house went up on Monday. It was great. You and Carl and Wrighty talked about the weekend's games, talked about Arsenal Man United, talked about the Merseyside derby, talked about a couple of other bits and bobs. Stadio is coming to you today on Thursday, and it will also be coming to you on Friday to talk about the Europa League, the Conference League, and there's also a big Premier League game on tonight, Musa.
Goodness. I mean,
have you forgotten that your beloved Manchester United are playing tonight against Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea?
I've absolutely forgotten. I've absolutely forgotten.
Have a nice day.
Barely awake, but still, yeah.
So we'll be talking about that. And then next week, there's no Wrighty's house next week, but there will be three Stadios.
Three Stadios.
None of you asked for it, but you're sure as hell going to get it.
Exactly.
Everyone's just like, no, when we saw Wrighty's house go up on Monday, we were like, yay, no Stadio. And now it's like, no, three Stadios. Oh. Anyway, go and check the Wrighty's house. That's up now. Musa had a great piece. It's such a good piece, man. Honestly,
I know. Thank you.
I know you're here and I shouldn't say stuff like this to your face, but you know. But yeah, it's really good. Musa wrote a piece about Manchester City, Real Madrid, with some
that means peak a lot because it had
Musa
been a
Okwonga sentences in there. I was just, I could read it. It was like it was almost it was really weird. At one point, I had to double check I wasn't reading or wasn't listening to an audiobook of you reading that piece because I could just hear you saying it. Anyway, that's up on theringer.com/soccer now. I'll have a piece go up over the weekend or maybe early next week because I am going to. Actually, are you going as well?
I think I will go, actually.
Oh, we're both going. We're going to be going to Wolfsburg versus Barcelona, the second leg of the Women's Champions League on Saturday. I'm so hyped for that. I mean, I'm a little bit worried for Wolfsburg because I think the aggregate score could get a little bit...
I'm worried for Barcelona.
Messi?
They won't know what hit them. Listen, we've got to be bullish.
Yeah, listen, Barcelona go into the...
Home of the Wolves now. It's different. They're built different.
Can they do it on a...
Mild. Can they do it on a mild...
Yeah, a mild, lovely spring, Saturday evening in Germany. Can they do it? Probably. But we'll see. Anyway, we'll talk about that on Monday. There's also the second leg of PSG Lyon as well. First leg was a belter.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, check theringer.com in general. Some great NBA stuff going up around the playoffs. This week, we saw the return of one of the greatest things on The Ringer. The metal NFL draft.
Oh my God.
Chris Ryan, the devil.
Based Chris Ryan.
It's so good. Danny Kelly and Chris Ryan.
I love that so much. He kills me doing that stuff. And
it's so good, man. It's so good. We got to see Chris Ryan last week. It was amazing. We saw him in the UK and hung out with a couple of...
They say, never meet your heroes. They're wrong.
Just the best.
Great humans. Really, really good to meet them. Honestly. The gang, actually. Really good to meet them.
Other bits of admin. The next edition of Stadio newsletter is imminent. Go to stadio.football, scroll to the bottom, sign up, pop your email address in. You'll get a confirmation email, so check your junk folder. And we don't pass it on to anyone. We just use it to send you an email every now and again. And also the Stadio outros play us on Spotify. All the music we play out on each episode, newest one is at the top. Search for Stadio outros on Spotify. And that is all the admin. Oh no, one more bit of admin. Shout out to Callum Jacobs. A New Formation, the book out now on Penguin. You've got an essay in there. Jeanette Kwachi's got an essay in there. Sana Qureshi's got an essay in there.
All about how Black British football has shaped the modern game.
Yes, we might have something coming up on the Ringer FC feed about that. So today, we are going to talk about the Men's Champions League and we're going to touch on a couple of other bits. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
All right, man, can we begin in the motherland?
Yes, we can.
The 0161.
Let's do it.
Manchester City 4, Real Madrid 3. This was very much the Avengers Endgame of the two ties this week.
Wow.
Whereas Liverpool Villarreal was probably a Michael Haneke film.
Oh, okay. Okay. Brilliant.
Just as enjoyable, very different. Oh, no, maybe that's a bit unfair. It was a little bit more suspense in that one. But anyway. Forget my crap analogy.
I like that.
All right, thanks very much. Let's talk about...
I would have gone more with Blade Runner 2049, but anyway.
Would you?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Manchester City Real Madrid because this was an epic. Where to start?
Trying to talk about what was most striking in this. And can I just say, as an overall thing, this is so frustrating for Pep because of all the Champions League semi-finals I've seen Pep coach, this was the one where individual instructions were the most important and where Pep coached it absolutely perfectly and where his players did not stick to the plan. They didn't stick to the plan. And it's funny because, you know, I've watched Pep in so many semis and in other times he's made adjustments like before when, you know, way back when he was missing Iniesta, so he brought in Keita and other things, or when he played Puyol as a fullback, you know, he's had to make adjustments before, right? But this was the game where it was really about, if you just do what I tell you, you're going to absolutely prevail. And this is going to be a masterpiece. This was all set to be the signature Pep Guardiola semi-final. This was it. This was going to be it. And he did everything perfectly. And that moment when they're 2-0 up and Mahrez doesn't make the pass to square for Foden, and you see Pep getting furious because he's like, you have to hit these like hard early. And Pep knew exactly what was coming. And it came. And that is why, in a weird, strange way, because he's a multimillionaire and I probably never meet him, and like, who cares about my sympathy? That is the most sympathy I think I've had for Pep Guardiola in the last few years of watching him coach.
There's that amazing clip film from behind the dugouts where he's a ball of energy and then he just collapses to his knees.
Because he knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
I wrote a tweet afterwards saying this is one of those rare games that where Pep is actually going to lock himself in a room for longer than he would have done if it was a defeat.
It's true.
Because he famously in Pep Confidential, he has that, goes through that process that he does when he loses games, and he's just like, I go in, basically I just lock down and I stay up all night and I watch all the games again, and I'm just, you know, he goes full It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia in front of the
yeah
and this I think he will do. But also I remember after the the second leg of the quarterfinals after that Atleti game, where we were talking about the loss of Kyle Walker and Cancelo, and
Pep knew.
And we said that maybe the left-hand side, the left-back, so Zinchenko coming in, probably wouldn't be that much. Obviously, missing João Cancelo is massive for any side in world football. But Zinchenko is still, he would be first-choice left-back at
most places, yeah.
Most teams in the Champions League, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was that right-hand side that they were going to struggle with, because that is where Real Madrid will hurt you. And having John Stones coming in, who wasn't, I don't think, fully fit anyway, and we saw had to go off with an injury. He and Man City just really struggled to deal with Vinicius down that Real Madrid left-hand side, because Mahrez is great, but he doesn't give you the absolute most defensive solidity on that flank. And also playing a centre-back wide. And I think John Stones is... But being honest, I do think John Stones is still underrated as a defender.
It's Vinicius.
It's so tricky to move
it's Vinicius,
out there at
right.
that stage, if, at this stage of a tournament. You know, you can get away with it, for example, against lower half sides, probably in a league game. But at this stage of the tournament, it's so tricky. And then being replaced by Fernandinho, who actually I thought did okay in certain moments and then really not okay in other moments. But he very much looked like a man of his age who usually plays centre midfield, who was being asked to play right back in a Champions League.
There were just no circumstances in modern... There's no circumstances in civilian or athletic life where a 21-year-old man loses a foot race with a 36-year-old man.
Oh, yeah.
They're really not. If they're running for the same bus, the outcome's going to be the outcome. It just is what it is.
That goal by Vinny was, there was something about that goal, I think, that it was almost worth more than the one goal. Like,
there were a couple of goals like that.
Real blow.
To be honest, all three of those goals were like that, actually.
Well, they were, actually, and that's the thing.
Isn't it funny? Yeah. Each of the goals was worth more than, because it shattered, each goal shattered City's momentum, shattered their air of superiority, shattered their joy at each point. And Vinicius's goal in particular, because the problem was, because he got the ball that high up and won it there, the moment he got it, I was like, that's in. Mm. It was so weird. I knew it was in. I was like, this is what they've been feasting on. And then it stopped City being allowed to play with freedom, actually. If it was a different kind of goal, if it was a goal that had not exposed directly the one thing that City were worried about, because the one thing they were most worried about was that mismatch, right, on that flank. That was the one. If it had been Rodrigo on that flank against Stones from the beginning, it would have been more manageable. Wouldn't have been easy, it would have been more manageable, but Vinicius is a unique talent. And you're right, the moment that happened, it was like City were kind of having to stay home a bit more.
Yeah, but I think the whole vibe of the game changed with that Benzema goal, because City was so good before that. Yeah, the first Benzema goal, sorry. Because you were talking in the Writers' House group about it, how it was like a hotel breakfast.
Yes.
You know, you just go up as many times as you want, help yourself. It doesn't really matter.
Yes.
Everything was there. They were getting exactly what they wanted, and they were... You know, did they hit the post, or did I imagine that?
Second half,
they hit the post. Yeah. First half, they had a couple of those chances that they should have
Foden drilled one wide, probably should have got on target.
Mahrez had another one. But the goal, like scoring so early, it's a really good thing for City, but sometimes it's so early and they were so in control that I wonder whether this isn't a criticism of those. I think it's just human nature. You subconsciously don't take every chance you get seriously because you are getting so many chances.
But I can imagine Pep giving that talk. I can imagine Pep specifically saying the third goal is the most important. Mm. I can actually imagine the moment the first goal goes in, Pep going, the third goal is the most important. I can imagine him saying that as an instruction, which is why I will be critical of City, because this is like Kevin De Bruyne's, not redemption arc, because he had nothing to redeem, but he had that injury in that final and didn't like fully acquit himself. And in this game, this man was playing with a vengeance. He was absolutely supreme. Like, Phil Foden was outstanding in the first half and he wasn't even close to what Kevin De Bruyne was doing. This is how good De Bruyne was. It is, and I know we talk a lot about, we praise him a lot, and it can slip into self-parody because, oh, De Bruyne was this and that. He was extraordinary. Like, his touch play, it was like watching peak Roger Federer, where the person on the other baseline is just scrambling around and Federer is just standing in the same place and just guiding him from corner to corner. And you're like you're four shots into like a 19 shot rally and like Federer's already won this. It was that easy. There was a point when the camera cuts to Modric and he looks stressed.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember, you see, it was, oh my God. Modric was just like,
Modric,
almost
that was
like,
the first time I think I've seen, this might be an over-exaggeration, but it's the first time I've seen Modric basically with the look of like, okay, this is what the end of my career is starting to look like.
He could feel it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, the game ain't in me no more, man.
I'm amazed that Kroos lasted 90 minutes. Well, I'm not, because actually the subs made perfect sense. And actually, can I say with Ancelotti as well, before we forget, something I wanted to mention too, I am loving the boldness of his substitutions. He's subbed Carvajal twice in this campaign, really early. And you know what's funny? You don't hear anything come out about it afterwards. People just accept it because they know everyone in that club dressing room has bought into the changes that absolutely need to be made. And even, and to be honest as well, like Alaba, I mean, Militao, if we're being really honest, Militao was maybe slightly lucky not to get hooked too.
Alaba had a hamstring concern before the game and was actually heavily rumoured that he wasn't going to play at all. So I think it was just that issue.
That's
and it was the same with Stones, actually. Like, injury, doubt, risked anyway, and both came off. But to be fair, Alaba didn't look too sharp anyway, uncharacteristic for him. He got, for the Gabriel Jesus goal, he just looked a little bit of half a step slow.
Mm.
He got uncharacteristically the wrong side.
And he got drawn out for the first goal as well. His movement
wasn't great, actually. And again, Carvajal was not questionable, but I think it was... Poor Carvajal seems to be in the wrong place for at least one goal per tie in this knockout phase.
Yeah.
But the finish from Gabriel Jesus was so good. Just that composure. And all you need is a rumoured transfer to Arsenal to turbocharge your form by the looks of it. Because he has been like borderline unplayable since that came out.
He's been a proper nine. He has been
a proper nine for the first time in quite a long time, I think.
Hallelujah, yeah, yeah.
Pep's realised that they cannot replace him.
Pep gave him the talk. I got to say, Bernardo Silva as well, I've got to give him a shout, because ever since like his moment of truth where there was talk that he might be out the door, he has been supreme. He was unbelievable.
I love him in this deeper, like slightly deeper role.
It's brilliant. Defensively, it's extraordinary. Yeah.
Him dropping a little bit deeper, he's almost playing like Gundogan role. When Gundogan was dropping deep and kind of being metronomic. He's just so good. Like, if you think about this, Ilkay Gundogan was in for a shout of City's best player or most important player. And now he can't even get in the starting 11.
He can't get in.
There are just so many options there for Pep. It takes you a few games to realise that Bernardo Silva is actually playing where he is.
Yeah. I said this with Kyle Walker. When Kyle Walker got the injury, when I saw Pep's anger and concern, I was like, because what Kyle Walker specifically does is unique to that squad. It is, actually. Mm. Like, I know Cancelo is an incredible playmaker and a very good defender, but there's a particular way that Kyle Walker occupies the winger that is extraordinary, where he can occupy too. Like, he allows Mahrez to basically just go forward and create purely because he can lock up two-thirds of that flank. Defensively, his recovery play, his combinations, like he's an absolute, you know, fullback / wingback in the most conventional sense. In a way that Cancelo isn't. I love Cancelo, don't get me wrong, but like the particular thing that Kyle Walker gives you is, like, I would almost feel like for that matchup, he's the number one choice that Pep would want against Vinicius. And he wasn't there. And Vinicius made absolute hay. And The problem, of course, with Modric is, if you give him a sniff, Benzema scores, Modric is like, oh, we can have a party. Oh my goodness, it's on. And then everything changes, the whole body language, the swagger, the playmaking. Valverde, all of a sudden, his pressing starts connecting, because once Modric starts finding his rhythm, then Valverde's energy, but also like his intelligence.
Slight surprise inclusion, Freddy Valverde, who I think actually did really well.
I think so, yes. But yeah, he has always done well when he's been a surprise inclusion.
Yeah, true.
And that's the thing, because, and this is no disrespect to Kroos. Kroos, but the absence of Casemiro, he had to cover more ground and do more things. Actually regulated the play, I think, not too bad. I think actually Madrid weren't caught out so badly through the middle. It was more that, like,
they couldn't defend wide areas.
I've never seen so many players arrive so late to so many presses. Like, Madrid weren't even pressing that badly. It's just that City were moving the ball at the speed of light.
Yeah.
At the speed of light. Like, the opening 20 minutes of the game, I was like, this actually feels like science fiction. It was genuinely like the absolute peak Pep. It made Madrid actually look worse than they were.
Because it was a strange kind of press, though, because it wasn't like they were swarmed or anything. It was as soon as Real Madrid pinged the ball out to one of the fullbacks, it was panic stations. And I couldn't really figure out why, because actually, on the few occasions in that early stage, like before the Benzema goal, I think they maybe had like one chance before that that was a bit of a warning to City. But it was really the Benzema goal, which was like, no, like, we still got it. But when the few occasions that they did break that City press, they actually got out quite nicely.
Yeah, they did.
And it was really weird that it seemed the first time in the competition that they actually seemed to panic, because they didn't even really do that against Chelsea, even though Chelsea was so superior in those early stages. They didn't really do it against PSG.
Because
they were in this kind of damage limitation mode for that first leg. It really did look for the first time that Real Madrid was severely wobbling, like proper wobbling.
Yeah.
And then that Benzema goal just changed everything. You know how we said before how, like, it felt like some teams have to work super, super hard for chance creation? It almost feels like Real Madrid are the opposite. Real Madrid actually don't really need to work that hard for chance creation. You know, even like Atleti, the amount of energy that went into a counterattack against City, and Real Madrid are actually the opposite. They don't have to work that hard to hurt elite sides. It's like you said in that, in your piece, like, I don't want to spoil it, but it's like advanced technology, like having your driveway blocked by a horse and carriage. It was an amazing analogy. Like,
oh, thanks. You know, it's funny because I looked at Real Madrid, and it's funny you mentioned Atleti, because in terms of the efficiency, this actually felt like that run they had to the final at Atleti when Griezmann was just like balling out. And they were almost taking pride in the fact, and actually this shout out to Tifo. Tifo did an amazing breakdown of this. It's like, what was the example they used in the video, the tactical breakdown?
Was it JJ's? Said,
I think so. It was amazing. He said, Real Madrid get three chances and score five goals, which I thought was the most incredible. Yeah. Shout out to Tifo. That's, they're just always brilliant. The most brilliant breakdown.
That's perfect. That's a perfect way to explain it, because that Benzema chance was not easy.
No, it was not at all.
It was really not easy. Just kind of executed it with no drama whatsoever.
That's an unbelievable finish. You know, it's one of those ones when you see Benzema score a goal like that, you know, we talked about the psychological effect of certain goals. It's because as a defender, you're thinking, we can't go away with anything.
Yeah.
He's absolutely locked in. He's had nothing and he scored that. It's such a difficult finish. And then again, so then it pegs you back a little bit. Then it makes you hesitant in your playing out, because you're like, oh, Benzema's pressing me, I can't. He's going to feast on that. So then it inhibits everything. And you saw that down the right flank with City, even before Stones went off, the difficulty they're having playing out, because they knew that side is being targeted. They knew that was the weaker side. So Benzema was going to press, shift the play over to the right. City'd have to play it out on the right side, which they would have been told. This is the thing. Pep would have told them all of this. Pep would have been like, their press is so good, they're going to work you to the right and they're going to target you. So they knew all of this. And this is why the Mahrez miss is so frustrating, because it was like, the Mahrez miss, the failure to make the pass. It was like, Mahrez, if you're not going to defend, that's not your thing, fine. But you have to be decisive up top. That's literally your job.
I'm wary of saying that if City go 3-0 up, then that's it. Because as we've seen numerous times before with Real Madrid, they're just like...
We've seen that happen. We've seen a 3-0 lead. Yeah,
they are like the ultimate undead football team.
Yeah, they are. Because like a zombie, Madrid have thousands of years of accumulated wisdom.
Like, can we talk about my favorite 3 minutes of the entire match?
Let's do it.
It was the Foden goal, assisted by Fernandinho, and Kevin De Bruyne starts to run away to celebrate with Phil Foden, and then checks his run and goes back to Fernandinho. So everyone who's on the pitch goes to celebrate with Fernandinho first, and Phil Foden, for a slight second, realizes that he's only getting mobbed by substitutes and looks a bit pissed off. But I actually thought, like, Fernandinho going forward, for example, was really good in this game. He did something. I think he literally came on. Mm. He got the ball and cut inside and just sat Vinicius down. And it was just like, the old boy still got it.
Yeah, sadly. Young blood. You young blood. Like,
this is what we used to do in midfield. And then the next minute, Pep gets booked. And Juanma Lillo on the bench, on the Man City bench, you could see on the camera shot behind him, is just giving the biggest finger wag. No. And I just love it because he can't even hear the conversation. He's so far away. That's it. Like, the distance between the City bench and the actual touchline where Pep stood is quite a distance, especially in a loud atmosphere. Mm. And I just love the confidence that Lilo's just like, no.
Amazing.
Then literally after that, this is all happens at 53, 54, 55, Vinicius's goal.
Yes.
And then you have the Camavinga for Rodrigo change. 4 minutes later, Bernardo Silva scores that absolute wonder goal where...
Oh my gosh, play advantage, listen, don't they? Play advantage.
Well, he... Okay, so Real Madrid plays the whistle.
I think Courtois does play the whistle. I think he's just wrong-footed by the brilliance of the strike. Because if you see where it goes, like when he hits it, you might expect a low one. And like Courtois slightly on his heels, just because I don't think he's expecting it to go right in that corner. It's very, very easy to watch a finish like that and afterwards be like, oh, I should have gone X, Y, Z. Like, he put a lot of hot sauce on that.
Do you think even Bernardo Silva was thinking this is going to get... He kind of hit that with like a free hit. It was like, this is probably...
The rest
to blow the whistle, so I'm just going to absolutely whack this.
Ripped it, yeah. Great finish. See, but even
unbelievable goal.
There's the game management
issue.
There's
so many goals in this game that were just absolutely sick.
But we'll get to the one that will get the headlines, or did get the headlines. But at 4-2... there's a game management issue there. That is where Pep maybe might look at himself and be like, maybe I could have brought in, not Gundogan, but like, or done something just to regulate play more. Done something to, I don't know if it would have been Gundogan. This is the weird thing, because Pep, again, there was nothing he had to fix. He'd coached that team to the limits of what it needed. Everyone was in the place they needed to be in. It's why we didn't see Grealish. It's why we didn't see Gundogan, because everyone had exactly the role that was assigned to them. And all Pep was basically would have said would be like, just execute and we'll win this by two clear goals. Mm. And they should have taken it 4-2. At that point, they should have taken it.
Well, I mean, they could have done. I mean, the handball is what it is. I think it's really unlucky. A lot of people were just doing the whole like, what, you can't do that. You can't do that. And like, yeah, you can't do that. But it's just one of those, when the ball skids off your head and hits your hand, which is less than what, a couple of feet away, I think people forget that when you're jumping and contesting for a header in the box, like, your arms are going up.
It's a
penalty. It's one of those, we've talked about this before, that kind of, we know it's a penalty. One of those, it doesn't really seem that fair to be a penalty for something like that, but it is a penalty. And then the penalty happens. The Panenka.
The fact he does that Panenka, he does that, and then you're like, it's just such a statement of, we're coming for you. Because he missed two against Osasuna, I think, just a couple of weeks ago.
Where Edison dived the side that he put both of those penalties.
And he floated it down the middle. High.
Do you know what I really hope he said? And this is because I love Edison as a goalkeeper. I think he's great. But if Benzema had clocked that Edison went the way that he went when he missed those two, there's part of me that really hopes that as he floated it down the middle, he just went, not today.
I mean, there was an element of that. There was an element of, he executed that exactly as he wanted to. Like, even putting it that high.
Mm.
Like, you put that high, so there's no chance of him clawing it back. But also, you put it that high, that person can actually just watch it. So you're lying on the ground and you're still seeing it pass over your shoulder.
Yeah, there are kind of like a couple of Panenkas differ. There are some Panenkas that are just like, haha. They're like banter Panenkas. Do you know what I mean?
I did this.
Look at me. And there are some that are just like, no, you need to watch.
Like the Pirlo one.
Yeah.
The Pirlo one was low, but the way that Pirlo did it, Benzema hits this off the front, off his laces, off the front, whereas Pirlo almost cuts under it.
Yeah.
So it's actually even more contemptuous, because it's so contemptuous. If you watch it again, the Pirlo one again and again, you can almost read it. And the statement there is almost like, if you were paying attention, you'd have caught this. That's why the Panenka is so devastating for a goalkeeper.
See, this is the thing with Pirlo. I think he would have said Gianluigi would have saved us.
That is exactly the energy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know this? You know, there's footballers doing certain things where you're like, I can imagine footballers doing out of context things in the football field. So we'll get to this game in a moment. But in the same way that I could imagine Pirlo with a glass of wine scoring at Panenka and Benzema just like swigging like a bottle of that Club Marte, like in a Berlin park doing that. Like you can imagine them like chipping keeper and his clerks, right? The same way we can imagine, I can imagine like Thiago playing against Villarreal in flip-flops. It was that casual. Like just, you know those, not the sliders.
No, not flip-flops, but just barefoot.
You know the socks actually. And sliders.
Yeah, socks. Oh, dude, take my money. Listen, you know I'm a socks and sliders fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Socks and sliders all day, man.
So comfortable. No consolation, but that first 20 minutes is as good as I've seen Pep in late stage Champions League.
Yeah, think about it. That right-hand side for City is a problem. The Benzema penalty to one side, because that can happen any time, anywhere with any player, right? But the two goals that they conceded City from open play both came from slight breakdowns defensively on that right-hand side.
Yeah.
The crossing for Benzema at the beginning. I don't think Ferland Mondi gets closed down quick enough. I think he has a little bit too much time there.
Mm.
And then also Vinicius just breaking down that left-hand side and he was away. The fact that he went through Fernandinho's legs like kind of on the halfway line and that was it, they were in.
Yeah.
That is a problem for them and that's one that they need to fix because that is going to be where the open play threat really comes from. The thing with City is that they have the tools in the middle of the park and they have enough options in the middle of the park and they have enough different types of central midfielders then backed up by an elite centre-back pairing to kind of deal with the centre midfield threat. I still think Modric will pull strings and they will be threats within that, but I think they're actually one of the best equipped sides. Them and Liverpool are the best equipped in the tournament to deal with that centre midfield threat from Real Madrid where even Chelsea have struggled. But it's that Real Madrid left-hand side that they need to lock down. Because Mondi and Vinicius is a problem. It's a way more of a problem than Carvajal and Rodrigo or whoever plays down that right-hand side.
Yeah.
And that's the area they really need to fix. I think if Kyle Walker plays in this game, I don't think City concede as many as they do.
No, I agree.
That's not exactly a wild take.
It's absolutely fair. Yeah.
But anyway, what a game. Can't wait for the second leg.
What a treat, yeah.
Before we move on to the other game, we will talk about stuff like the proposal from UEFA to make some of these knockout ties one-legged and stuff like that. We'll talk about that at a later time because we want to talk about the good stuff right now. There's enough bad stuff.
Yeah, UEFA for fixing what's not broken. Oh,
fucking hell. Anyway.
Shout out to UEFA as well. I will say that one thing about the away goals. I mean, it's very early days. There's no away goals rule, but I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this so far.
I don't think it's actually affected it. Mm. But you know.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll get on to the other game.
Let's do it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, let's go to Anfield. Liverpool 2, Villarreal 0. I think this is a good result for Liverpool. Liverpool have had a few results in the knockout stages of the Champions League that maybe haven't been as mind-blowing or huge, but they've been good results.
Mm.
Villarreal obviously came with a game plan.
Mm.
And a game plan that I think is completely valid and completely understandable against one of the two best sides in the world, I would say, currently.
Yes.
A side with far fewer resources, a side who are massively overperforming. That's no disrespect to Villarreal, but in the first Champions League semi-final, I mean, that second Champions League semi-final, first one in 15 years, 16 years.
The fact they've been to two is pretty remarkable.
Coming off the back of a Europa League win, otherworldly.
Yeah.
Massively outperforming the expectations at the club. Completely understandable game plan, I think. And I genuinely believe that anyone who, like, we've all seen it. There have been some clips going around from various high-profile radio things in the UK, and there was probably some bits of punditry as well, just going after Emery and the approach. Those same people would have been talking about a complete naivety in Villarreal if they just come and try to like go toe-to-toe with Liverpool.
Also, what credit do those people give to Villarreal when they beat Bayern Munich, which is one of the great results of the knockout stages?
I mean, let's get real. Champions League nights, especially when English sides are involved, people kind of tell on themselves.
They do.
That's all I really have to say about that, because I think the Villarreal, weirdly, even though Liverpool were far superior, we know this, Liverpool had so much of the ball. But in that first half an hour, it wasn't really until about half an hour in. I think it was the Mane deflected volley just before Thiago hit the post.
Mm, yes.
The Mane one felt like for the first time in the game, the Villarreal were really wobbling.
They're breaking through. Yeah.
And I think that's, I think that's actually a massive credit to Villarreal and Emery. I think it was around the half an hour mark. Yeah. Like Villarreal dragged that game down a little bit and stopped Liverpool being as fluid. And
I want to throw something in there as well. How about the opening moment when I realized that this was going to be a tough night for Villarreal? So you know how like an analogy here was with Real Madrid. You know how like Camavinga is most effective at the moment off the bench because he gives you the energy, the injection. He allows Modric to push higher, and he's such a vital sub for Real Madrid. Chukwueze is a vital sub for Villarreal, but the absence of Moreno meant that he had to start, so he didn't have that change of pace. So Gerard Moreno, this is the thing, you saw it with Villarreal. It was really how the game plan was so unfairly affected by the absence of Moreno. And I know everyone goes, oh, well, listen, you have to adapt. But Villarreal, this is where you see the resources really mattering.
Yeah, they haven't got, if Firmino goes down with an injury, they can't just put Mane at centre and put Diogo Jota in. They don't have that ability.
Thank you. And here's the thing, here's the crucial thing I feel. The way that Villarreal played, they got criticised a lot for their cowardice. I thought they were extremely brave. The way that they played out from the back was incredible. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Right. Because there were a couple of times in that first half, I was at the derby on Sunday, and the main problem that Everton had, and I know that they're different levels because Everton are fighting relegation and Villarreal are in this Champions League semi-final. But, you know, Villarreal's resources they haven't got the resources of Everton.
They don't.
And the difference between Everton here, and I think you said it on Wright's House, was that you have to have a plan if you're going to play that way for when you do get the ball, because you are going to get the ball. And Villarreal, a couple of times, there was a couple of link-up.
They had the plan. They had a plan,
Centre-back, left-back, popped it into Parejo. And Parejo, there was once where I think he played a 1-2 with Francis Coquelin, and then they were out.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, they're actually getting out. They're not getting out with the fluidity, or they're not getting out every time they get the ball or have possession. But there were a couple of moments in that first 25 minutes where they got out, and I was like, actually,
yes,
this
yes.
could work.
Bingo. And thank you. And with Gerard Moreno on the end, but making the movement to either divert runners, there were a couple of times where they broke and they got to the final third. And it was like, if you had Moreno there cutting inside or out, that's a different proposition. And they didn't quite have it. And that's all it was with Villarreal. This is why I will be quite bullish in defending them, because they weren't just sitting deep. They were actually trying to absorb that press. And this is the thing. Playing out like that at Anfield against that press, it's the best press in the world, really. It is the best press in the world. And they're doing that. They're not just coming to Anfield and being like, okay, let's park the bus. They're like, no, we need to actually absorb all the shock and go at them. And this is why I will always defend them, because they gave it a really good go. And the thing about Liverpool is they scored their two goals in about 3 minutes. I would love to see the statistical breakdown of how often they score in 3 minute bursts, 2 and 3 minute bursts. They must be one of the teams in the world that are just unbelievable at that.
It's because men are too emotional to play football.
Too emotional.
Man, it's too emotional to play Liverpool.
Do you know what's funny as well? I remember watching this game and thinking, although the opposition is Spanish, I was like, this is exactly the game that Thiago was signed for. Because we said when Thiago was signed by Liverpool, we talked about passing the ball before the gaps close. We talked about that time and again.
We had some questions. Moko, can we get like 5 minutes of you talking about Thiago?
Yes.
And then Rhino Burns said, maybe 10 minutes of Moose and Ryan talking about midfield play from three of the best right now. Kevin De Bruyne, Modric and Thiago in the first leg.
Oh my goodness.
My feelings have been felt watching this football. So we talked about KDB and Modric.
Yeah, we did.
Thiago time.
Oh my God. Okay. I made a comment on Twitter. I said, games like this are where you really see the need for Liverpool to have that runner from midfield. Because I thought the one thing that Liverpool are missing in this game in particular is breaking the lines with the ball at your feet. And to sound slightly smug, when they got the opening goal, it came from Thiago pushing it. And I know he's not the quickest, but he pushed it off on the left flank and he broke that line because I thought, you're not going to pass through the lines with Valencia. The only way you're going to do it is by carrying the ball because they're too smart, right? Their coverages are too good. Sorry, basketball depression. Their coverages are too good of the zonal areas for you to pass through them. It's not going to work. And you can do the kind of... you know, the diagonal, like I call it paper cut passing or hidden diagonals, but they're going to close those gaps. They did really, really well, with the exception of like Luis Diaz out on the left flank. They actually coped pretty well. And Mo Salah was not pre-AFCON Mo Salah. Like he wasn't, there's a couple of chances, which I would say pre-AFCON, like fully sharp Mo Salah hits in the top corner, right? So him being,
there was like one in the first half that went just over that I was convinced was going in the top corner.
Him being 15% below his absolute, 20% below his absolute
best. In a goal
best.
Scoring sense. Though, and link up, he's been really good.
But in a goal scoring sense.
Yeah.
Which is
just
what
purely
they,
in a goal scoring sense. Right, but I think this is, as long as you're getting stuff out of him in another sense, I think statistically.
Yeah, yeah. He's still dangerous as hell. Yeah.
And also remember, this has coincided with Mane moving more centrally.
Yeah. So he's still dangerous as hell. Yeah. He's still like.
Yeah.
So it was just slightly below his best. But what Thiago does, not just pushing the ball forward because he's got all the tricks you can imagine. It's the simplicity and the tempo. And the thing about them scoring those two goals in 3 minutes, it's because of the passing intensity where he just doesn't give you a break. He doesn't give you a break. You saw against Everton, I think he only misplaced two passes. He only failed to complete two passes against Everton.
He was unbelievable in that other game.
He was astonishing.
In the first half, he was right in front of me and I basically just watched him for the majority of that first half.
Just in awe, in awe.
He was unbelievable. And I've said this before, like watching Thiago in person is a different experience. Like I saw him a couple of times at Bayern, a few times at Bayern actually, in person. And it's an experience. It's a player that you, no matter how good you think he is just by watching him on TV, when you watch him in person, I don't want to be one of those people like, you got to be there. But like, it is a different experience. It's like, you know, going way, way back. The first time I took my dad to an Arsenal game after Arsenal had signed Mesut Ozil. And my dad was really on the fence about Ozil, and then he watched him in a game, and he was just like, "I get it now."
It's funny because
when you can see the whole pitch,
yes,
and you can see how what they do affects things that are way off camera. It adds a whole other level of appreciation.
The decisions, yeah, because you see that you have some idea of the decisions they are making because you see the scale.
Well, let's talk about his moment for the goal, right? The opening goal, because it all comes from him flicking that pass central with the outside of his foot.
Having pushed it outside. Yeah, having like pushed
having
past
like essentially sucked like three or four Villarreal players out towards that Liverpool left-hand side.
Mm.
And it's really subtle, but that pass catches them all on their heels.
Yes,
and
yes,
they never quite recover from it.
No.
And it's so often you see this with deflected goals that it's because of two or three passes before that leads to someone scrambling to block something and it ends up in the back of the net. And it all comes because his body shape is absolutely, if you're defending him, I don't even really blame the defensive. I don't even blame the defending here because his whole body shape, where the ball is, it looks like he's going down that left-hand side. He looks like he's going down the line.
Yeah.
And he just flicks it with the outside of his foot and they all have to turn. And sides like Villarreal, when you set up in this way, not sides like Villarreal, but any side who sets us up this way against a side like Liverpool, you're really in trouble when you have to turn.
Yes.
That's why teams defend in such low blocks, because the game is in front of you and it's manageable. You're really in trouble when you have to turn. And weirdly here, usually that turning happens when they've maybe been caught out a little bit too high up the pitch. Mm. But here, they were actually in a decent shape, but turning from one side of the pitch to the other side of the pitch. I found it quite interesting, actually. And I know that I actually tweeted about this at halftime when it was 0-0, saying I don't want to go all Spain versus Sweden in the Euros, but I'm really enjoying this game. And a lot of people were just being like, this crap.
But it's when you are enjoying it because
it's the smallest bits. Where, like, in comparison to Man City and Real Madrid, where it's action, action, action. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. It's relentless, it's relentless. It's an action movie. Like, the moments of reward have to be more elite. They don't have to be more elite, but they are just as satisfying in games like Liverpool against Villarreal, because, like, they've had to really work for it.
It's the problem solving. Yeah, it's problem solving.
And I know that everyone sometimes just wants to be entertained, but I find that really intriguing. I actually find those games really enjoyable when you watch them on your own, because you can really zone in and focus.
This is why I wanted to soak this one up at home, I think, because, you know, I think I sort of interrupted myself earlier, but, you know, Thiago, when he was at Bayern, the amount, every single week he would face the defense, almost every single week, he would have faced the team setting up like Villarreal did. Yeah. And his whole thing was just finding the gap. So one thing he brings to the team, which is amazing, is the patience too. Him being like, he can say, actually, he has the experience to say to his teammates, do you know what, this is going to take an hour. And the opening goal will go in about six.
I've got an hour.
Thiago's
totally just like, don't worry, I've got an hour.
You can imagine him like, and people are going like, oh, frustrated after about 30 minutes. He's like, guys, still got half an hour of this. Keep pushing, keep switching. Ah, oh, it's not making a difference. Trust me, it's making a difference. Do you know what I mean? It's like a chief architect just overseeing the construction, and everyone's just moving the stones around. He's like, no, trust me, like, are you sure that should go there? Yeah, trust me. Like that arch goes there. No, trust me. And then like 2 months later, oh, we get it. Now we get it. And that's all this is about, just shifting people around, moving them, unbalancing them. Then it gets the 2-0. The beauty is you still got Thiago there. It's good night at 2-0 because the game management. We saw him that Champions League final, you know, the astonishing Champions League final performance against PSG, where he just controls everything. And the moment he goes off, it's pandemonium. Mm-hmm. Before I forget, talk that PSG are selling Paredes. And if that happens, there's a lot of teams that should be pouncing on that, because the way that man controlled tempo.
Yeah.
The way that controlled against Real Madrid, the way he controlled tempo, he showed something there. Yeah. Hell of a player. So yeah. Also, like, shout out to Rulli, who got wrong footed for the opening goal. I just feel for him because he's had a superb tournament. Yeah. And there was a lot of talk by a lot of people who clearly haven't been watching Rulli, who's been brilliant in so many games with Villarreal. So I don't want that to kind of tarnish his campaign, because it was, you know, an unfortunate step. But also, on a more positive note, shout out to Sadio Mane, who yet again scored, and who frankly is putting together.
Before you do shout out Sadio Mane, could we just shout out Jordan Henderson? Because I think him bursting down that right-hand side for the first goal, I think, you know, he was also like, I was a little bit worried about Jordan Henderson in this game.
Mm, okay.
Because he was really angry all game. I haven't seen Jordan Henderson this sneery for a while. I think actually his reaction to the goal shows you how hard Liverpool were finding it on the pitch to really, really break Villarreal down.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did have chances. Like, they had like 12 shots in the first half, a couple on target, right? So it wasn't like they were creating really good chances, like really, yes, really, really good chances.
And Jordan Henderson's, he's like, quite, he knows, he's a barometer. Man. He's a barometer.
He is a barometer. Yeah, he is a barometer. And I think that was maybe why he was so frustrated all game. But anyway, Sadio Mane.
No, it's fine. Actually, just before Sadio Mane as well, before I jump in as well, the most terrifying moment of the match that I saw, this left me in genuine fear. You know, you watch a game of football, you're like, all of a sudden, that would be frightening if I saw that in anywhere in the world. Kanate's on the ground and Virgil van Dijk pulls him up with a single hand.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. I'm just like,
oh my God. I was like,
and like, Ibrahim Kanate, he is not a short king.
He's Virgil van Dijk pulled him up with a single, you know, those superhero movies where you're like, someone falls over the edge of the cliff And then like the person just like drags him up with one hand. It's like, nah, that's not real. How that CGI is like, okay, it's not CGI.
No, it's just Virgil. Virgil was the stunt double.
Terrifying. That needs to be an advert. They need to use that in our campaign. They need to. But yeah, the other thing, so Sadio Mane, I said this on Twitter, like this man has scored ever, the last 6 months maybe. And I know he's a big game goal scorer. I know, but the last 6 months in particular, AFCON, final, FIFA, penalty to put them through, Man City, Villarreal, like this man, the crucial goals he's scoring, unbelievable, unbelievable. Someone said like he's low-key turning into like one of the best nines out there. It's like, here's the thing, he always has been. Like you could play this guy either flank or through the centre.
Thiago knows, man.
Yeah,
Thiago like that post-match interview where he says, you know, we've got one of the best strikers in the world, and Salah goes winger, and he's just like, no, come on, you're a striker.
Yeah, yeah. There was a really lovely moment, actually. I think it was Zach Paklev on Twitter when we were talking about Sadio Mane, talking about his brilliance in like big games. And someone said, oh yeah, like my favorite was the 2018 Champions League final when Salah goes off and Mane just goes into overdrive.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, because I'd actually tweeted earlier. I was like, that's still my favorite Sadio Mane performance. The ability of Sadio Mane to level up in huge games is a thing of wonder. So, and then someone said, people replied to me going, oh, is he in the Ballon d'Or conversation? I'm like, yeah, gotta absolutely. Be. Of course he is. I mean, he'll get it, but he absolutely has to be in it.
It's got to be.
Yeah. Top three, in my opinion.
Let's say, for argument's sake, Liverpool do win the Champions League. But your first ever AFCON, or your country's first ever AFCON.
Yeah.
And then a Champions League.
And you take them to the World Cup.
And you take them to the World Cup, and you are
in the playoffs.
One of the most integral parts of that side. You've got to be in the conversation. You have to be.
If Liverpool win the Champions League, he is my Ballon d'Or shout.
Yeah, because I'm not actually one of these people who thinks that just winning X, Y, and Z means you should be nailed on for the Ballon d'Or, but I think it's all in context.
I think the decisive nature in terms of this being a head-to-head, I think that's the thing that would...
I wrote a tweet after this because it was about this goal, saying how it's rare now to see Liverpool goals that don't involve at least one piece of player movement that is almost impossible to defend against. And how that is a sign of how elite Klopp is as a coach.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this, about sides who can make you think like you're in a kind of okay setup and then split second and the ball's in the back of the net. And I was thinking about, it's a very easy one to think about, but I was thinking about 2011 Barcelona. And I was thinking, okay, is my comparison here of Liverpool too kind? And isn't that something that Barcelona used to do? And actually I was just like, no, because the movement with Barcelona was the ball. The ball movement was the thing that hurt you. And the thing about Liverpool is that they don't kill you with passes. They can do, but they don't. They kill you with movement.
Yes.
And actually the passes, on the whole, are quite simple for them.
It's so funny you should say that. And I love that you said this. I was thinking exactly this. It's so funny.
But the reason that they're simple is because the movement is so elite that they don't have to pull out some otherworldly pass a lot of the time. You still see them do it. I think they're one of the best sides I've seen, especially in the modern era, who combine the two. Man City are slightly different machine, and then
you've articulated this perfectly. I was the last 3 days I've been thinking, it's like City's midfield terrifies me, and Liverpool's forward line terrifies me, and it's because of the movement and because what Klopp has done. Klopp has very deliberately placed different emphasis. Like Klopp doesn't have six Bernardo Silvers. He doesn't.
No.
But he's chosen not to, because he's like, I want different things.
Yeah.
I see the Gundogan configuration. I see Gundogan, De Bruyne, Foden, but that's ball movement. I see Klopp has chosen a different center of tactical gravity for his team.
Yeah, and there's a moment on that Mane goal where he drops out in a slightly deeper right hand, slightly deeper pocket on the right hand side. Then Salah goes, or I might be getting the wrong way around, and the defense kind of just like, we're good here. We can see them both.
Yeah.
And it's just the understanding between the pair of them to drop. It's classic old school double pivot territory, well, like centre midfield play, but it's just higher up the pitch. You stay, one stays, one goes.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really crude way of explaining it, but that's because that's basically what happened. Mane comes out, Salah is the furthest forward. Salah comes out, Mane goes. It's a great ball from Salah. It's in the back of the net. It's unbelievable. And I think the comparison with City is really interesting, and I think this is why they make such interesting matchups, because City, their real thing was just passing, overloading one side, and then the switch kills teams. Remember, like they did it over and over and over and over again. Or They get down the side and they cut back. It's all about creating, and that's very similar to what Barcelona used to do, but it's just in an evolved way because it was so fresh back then to a lot of people. But it's just, you target one pocket, you pass, you drag the rest of the side over, you overload, and then you go. And with Liverpool, they don't actually ever, it seems, I need to go back and really look at this. I might go back and actually just watch a load of Liverpool goals to make sure I'm not getting this completely wrong. But it kind of feels like they really need to actually outnumber sides in a personnel point of view. It's purely on the movement of the players. And it's just wild. It's unbelievable.
I love that you said that. It's funny because you've literally articulated right there something I've been thinking about for 3 days continuously going, what is it about these teams? What is it about Liverpool that is just... I look at that midfield and it doesn't frighten me like the City one does. But it's not supposed to.
That's the problem.
Exactly.
And that is the problem. This is why I know there are a load of conversations about, you know, finances and stuff like that. And we know all of this stuff. When we know the thing with City. But from a purely footballing point of view, it is unbelievable to see these two sides the way they are.
Yeah,
because they play in very different ways, but there are some similarities, and I find it so intriguing.
We're fortunate to have two coaches at the absolute peak of their powers with nothing to prove. Because frankly, and Pep really wants a Champions League, but he has nothing to prove. If Pep never coached another game, he would still be, for my money, the most compelling coach I've ever seen.
Oh, you're looking at two of the all-time great coaches ever.
Yeah,
it's wild. It's so wild. But anyway, this feels different to previous rounds that Villarreal have kind of, because Liverpool are just a way more complete.
This feels like Benfica. This feels like Benfica Juve. In terms of how they've just like navigated this.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Villarreal, I don't think they'll be absolutely devastated in this result.
No, look how they went for Bayern at their place.
Yeah,
Villarreal at home are a serious proposition.
And the thing is, Klopp will take them seriously. Like he knows how good they can be at home.
Villarreal, if we judge by what they've done in previous games, they're absolutely going to heat that thing up from the opening moments. They're going to go at Liverpool. This won't be a slow out the gate, I don't think, second leg.
Yeah. Couple of quick questions. Antonio Lasada said, would yesterday's approach by Villarreal be generating controversial headlines had it happened under Atletico/Simeone? If not, what are the differences you saw to defend their case? It's weird that they have come under so much criticism because they have far fewer resources that Atleti have. We've said this before. I could also understand why Simeone played that way against Man City in the Champions League. They don't play like this every week.
I just feel like if Emery had had a little bit more off the bench, this is a slightly different outcome. They had Moreno to start and Chukwueze off the bench. I think that's, it was basically the worst possible injury for them.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the only slight issue I had with the VRL lineup was I was surprised that Emery didn't maybe just go with Danjuma on his own.
Yeah,
stick an extra body in midfield.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't when I saw the two.
That was the only thing I was a bit like.
Because Lascelles has been brilliant. Lascelles has been brilliant at breaking.
Yeah, and I think maybe having him as a slightly more advanced. I know he played Coquelin a little bit more advanced, but I think
that's a really good shout. Actually,
maybe packing another body in midfield, I think, might have been the only thing.
I didn't like Lascelles that high up. I didn't like.
But if we had another body in midfield, it would have been fine.
Exactly. I agree. I like him.
That was the only thing I was a bit like, shit. Because then, for example, in the game state as it was at 0-0, you could have then brought Chukwueze on at halftime.
Yeah. Good shout.
Couple of quick questions from the two ties. Cupcakes and caviar. Could Vinicius's nutmegging of Fernandinho be considered a Jedi nutmeg since he didn't touch the ball and essentially did it with his mind?
You know, that's one of my favourite types of skill. Leave and then the turn.
Yeah. They also say, are there other Champions League Jedi mind tricks? The dummies without touching the ball and then you sit someone down and then they're just...
Deco, the master of that.
Deco was the master of that.
Modric, the master. Modric was the master of misdirection, actually. Absolutely.
Couple of quick ones. Peter Feldman said, will Foden manage to roll back onto the pitch for a third straight leg of the Champions League? Will it cause another epic melee? Who will pull Grealish's hair this time? I've got to admit, the Foden roll back onto the pitch is one of my favourite developments in the late stages of the Champions League.
It's brilliant. I just want to talk about how tough Foden is very briefly. Like, about this man gets absolutely hammered and comes back.
He gets the shit kicked out of him.
He does. And always wants and seems to actually invite contact because he knows if he draws contact. There's one bit on the left flank in the first half of that game where He draws two players and just pops it out.
I love it. He's amazing. Unbelievable. He's an amazing footballer.
Yeah, a magician.
One quick one from Sam Mitchell. What is your under-the-radar venue to host a Champions League final? Mine's not under the radar, but the fact that the Westfalenstadion hasn't had a Champions League final is...
It what? No.
No one wants to go to Dortmund for the Champions League final.
Why not? You love it.
No one in Germany wants to go to Dortmund. I love Dortmund. And every time I say I love Dortmund, everyone's just like, why?
It's a vibe. Cologne be nice. Probably a bit too small though. 50,000 is not quite big enough for a final. You probably want a bit more, like maybe 70. I like Dortmund. Yeah, I'll go with Dortmund.
Because that stadium, the Westfalenstadion is one of the best stadiums in the world.
You'll go with that.
The only problem is, who gets the Südtribüne?
Oh, I like that.
You know?
Also, it's a train ride for us, isn't it? Do we have to change to get to Dortmund? Is it straight?
It's just a straight good ride. 3.5 hour train ride.
3.5, that's nothing.
Yeah, I'm just checking the venues. It has never hosted a Champions League final.
That's wild.
But I suppose it's rare that non-major cities within those countries do. Let's talk about a couple of quick results before we go. Inter losing 2-1 against Bologna, thanks to an absolute howler from Radu.
It is those two for the league, Inter and Milan. But I will say this, the run-in, they both have a very tough run-in.
They really do.
The last four games are both difficult. Yeah, they'll
always watch Atalanta because they drew 4-4 with Torino. And Udinese beat Fiorentina 4-0 as well. So Serie A was on one on Wednesday night. A quick shout for the CONCACAF Champions League. 2-2 against Pumas and Seattle Sounders. It was raining cats and dogs. And so were the penalties.
Raining catfish.
There were so many penalties in this game. Super fun. If you haven't watched it, go watch the highlights. It's the first leg of that final. And just quickly before we go, Arsenal have announced that Tobin Heath has been released early from her contract by mutual agreement. Tim Stillman quote tweeted it saying, "A shame this didn't really work out, but fitness the barrier ultimately." Blackstenius signed in January and has played more minutes than Tobin, who didn't complete 90 minutes for Arsenal. Her equaliser away at City, still incredibly crucial, and I know that she contributed off the pitch. I still think the signing made a lot of sense. Arsenal brought in 9 new players and a new manager since last summer, and they're competing with the Chelsea team who have been together for years and years. Bringing someone who has won so much made a lot of sense, in my opinion. That's what Tim said, and I have to agree with him. It's a real shame. Real shame. Because
it really is.
Yeah. Just one of those great players whose body lets them down.
Yeah.
And wish her all the best because she's ace, Tobin.
Yeah.
We've done everything we need to do today?
We have indeed.
Well, we'll be back tomorrow.
We will.
You know why?
Ha ha.
Da da da
da da.
I'm not finishing that. Maybe after the final, I'll give you all the full rundown. I haven't really done it this season.
No, that's true. It's true.
So yeah, we'll talk about Europa League, Conference League, Manchester United, Chelsea. Other than that, hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer, check stadio.football, scroll to the bottom, pop your email address in if you want to sign up for the newsletter, and Stadio Outro's playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on a brand new one from Chunky, GNG. This is out now. Go check it. Anything you want to add, Musok Wonga?
Nothing further. Nothing further.
Lovely. Well, you can add it tomorrow. Wow. Back-to-back Stadios.
Vibes, vibes.
Everyone's just like, no. 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 Much love, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you then. Man can't tell me now if they've never ever known no stress. Can't go talk up loud, then check up your guts on breath. Yeah, I might have seen some things, but I never gonna told no fed. If you cannot cope when it's on your toes, then it's on your head. Man can't tell me now if they never ever know no stress. Can't go talk up loud, then chuck up your guts on breath. Yeah, I might have seen some things, but I never gone and told no fed. If you cannot cope when it's on your toes and it's on your head. Said you're the best, then be the best. Said you're the one, I believe you wanna see, I guess. Come like Riddick, I see in darkness. No, I gotta make it count cause I'm blessed. All about making more and from less. Place it all on my crest. Might spoke it soft, but I spoke it all from my chest. Wrote it all from my head. Scrolled it, scribed it, was it over, no mess. Grind till Tina's old and then checked. Working through one on the process. Give my all and no less. Talking cheese or go shred. Progress, proceed, profesh. Feed you my pound in flesh. Invest, infect, infest. None of it said in jest. Never been second best. Youngest vet. Anything, everything, peppering, shelled on sets. Rung and ring, couple bells on deck. So they keep telling man yes. Big man, big range, Taliban flex. Feel bank, I will build interest. How I'm living so we're rid and get stressed.
get blessed. Crap where you go for you ever get set. More time vexed for the people that left, for the people that bled. No, to bring them back, I've been giving up bread, giving up cheese, giving up breath. Till they come, keep building up steps. I'm illing, I'm bringing my set. Man can't tell me now if they never ever know no stress. Can't go talk up loud, then chuck up your guts on breath. Yeah, I might have seen some things, but I never gone and told no fed.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.